This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the Sandwell News, due with you on the 11th of July, or a day or two sooner than that if you subscribe to our podcast. Before we get started with some breaking news of what's going on locally in Sandwell, here's the sunrise and sunset times for next week.
Sunrise this week will be at 5 a.m. Sunset at 9:25. On Tuesday, it will reach in excess of 28 degrees, with the heat wave lasting into the following week.
So, we're in for another week of this heat wave, at least. And so, I hope you'll be wearing your sun cream when you go out on any of the SVI activities or out generally. And I do hope that on Monday, when it comes to the meeting at the town hall about SVI's future, that it won't be unbearably hot in the council house meeting chamber. Then, speaking of SVI activities, here's what's coming up with them this coming week.
Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here's the list of activities taking place next week. Monday, 6th July. Introduction to Becoming a Volunteer Telephone Befriender, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12:30 p.m. We are introducing our peer-to-peer telephone befriending scheme and welcome you to join this training and awareness session to find out more about what being a befriender involves. The morning will give you the opportunity to find out about the practicalities of the role, hear from an experienced befriender and learn about some of the important do's and don'ts necessary to be an effective and support befriender. Tuesday, 7th July. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Showdown, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 2 to 4 p.m. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is anyone can play, and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Wednesday, 8th of July, SVI Rocks, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join Rodrigo and Sarah Ann for our popular SVI Rocks session in the SVI Common Room. Whether you fancy a sing, want to bring an instrument, or just want to join in and have some fun, everyone's welcome. It's a great way to build your confidence, try something new, and make some noise together. Aquafit, Portway, Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 2 p.m. Get summer body ready. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone, with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you are interested. Women's Group, Coffee and Cake Afternoon, West Bromwich Town Hall, 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Come along and enjoy some sweet treats in a relaxed, friendly space where we can chat about the things that matter to women, from the serious to the social. This is your group, and we'd really love to hear your ideas about what you'd like to do over the next few months. It's a chance to share your thoughts, have your say, and join in conversations on topics like whether men should be welcome at women's group events. Thursday 9th July, Showdown, Portway, Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Dartmouth, Park Walk, 12 noon. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please let us know that you are coming so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team. Sandwell, visually impaired, West Bromwich Town Hall, West Bromwich, B708AY. Telephone 01215254810. www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Yes, I got a bit ahead of myself mentioning the meeting of SVI on Monday at West Bromwich Town Hall in the old council chamber, that is, of course. But now, here's the headlines for the stories from this week's Express and Star, courtesy, of course, of Express and Star Papers.
Headlines from the week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday, 1st of July. Baggies release tribute to young supported who died in Midlands. Lake concerns raised over scheme to convert former pub into a shop. Mayor buoyed by manifesto. Retailers selling e-scooters for commuting. Thursday, celebrations for West Brom cafes. First year, Tipton Building Society here to stay. Music and fun at Heritage Day. Sex assault on woman in park. Warning issued over disposable barbecues. Friday, meeting over shop selling lottery tickets license. More homes for landslide estate. Stabbed teenagers injuries. Bereaved dad demands action from NHS Trust. Saturday, beer we go, Algarve Albion base camp. Jim go ahead after successful appeal. Review of Matilda the musical. NHS communication overhaul. Police arrest 3 people. Monday, around 200 cannabis plants found in house. 10 crews battle Parkland blaze. Are you living in a home with dangerous faulty electrics? Tuesday. Arsonists use train and tram to carry out attack. Banks and building societies trusted more than shops. Closure order for shops selling illegal goods. Fire officers back from helping earthquake victims. New memorial to Joel unveiled.
And apart from those stories, we have the usual Talking News Federation rundown of audio described TV programmes and radio. There's also a celebration or event to mark Assistance Dogs. Apparently it's Assistance Dogs Week. Also along the way, probably just after the quiz or just after the radio and TV listings, we have the Albion football fixtures for this year. I hope too to include some thoughts on Site Village and the passing of the man who more than anybody else got Site Village going more than 30 years ago, the passing of George Bell, who died a couple of weeks ago. Many in the blindness community will remember some of the equipment he sold and the support he offered, particularly the Eureka A4, and I'm hoping to include a piece from Rob Pell's Jubilee magazine. Before all that, on to the first day's news from the papers.
Hi everyone, it's Mia, reading some newspaper articles from Wednesday the 1st of July in the Express and Star. I hope everyone's been enjoying the lovely weather that we've had as of late. And yeah, I hope everyone has some lovely summer plans coming up. Baggies released tribute to young supporter who died in Midlands Lake. West Bromwich Albion has paid tribute to a teenage fan whose body was found in a lake in the East Midlands. The body of 13-year-old Hayden Jones Powell was discovered off Foss Way, Syston, Leicestershire. Police, Fire and Rescue Service and East Midlands Ambulance Service were all called to the scene. Specialist dive teams launched into the water and found the boy's body. West Bromwich Albion has paid tribute to Hayden, saying they are desperately saddened at the loss of their young supporter. A club statement said everyone at West Bromwich Albion is desperately saddened to learn of the passing of young supporter Hayden Jones Powell. Our thoughts are with Hayden's family, friends and loved ones at this tragic time. After a period of mourning, a crowdfunder appeal was launched in Hayden's memory with the goal of helping his family raise enough money to give him a beautiful send-off. Donations quickly rushed in for the appeal and have since passed £16,000. The crowdfunder page read, "Hayden was such a beautiful, loving soul and we would like to be able to give him a send-off befitting him. We know nothing will bring Hayden back to us, but knowing we have said goodbye in the best way we can, we'll start the difficult process of healing our broken hearts." Riverside JFC, a club that Hayden played for, also released a tribute to the teenager, saying he was a valued member of the Riverside family. The club said, "It is with profound sadness that Riverside United JFC shares the heartbreaking news of the passing of one of our young players, Hayden Jones Powell. Hayden began his football journey with us as part of our Sparrow Hawks before progressing into our Merlins team. During his time at the club, he was a valued member of the Riverside family, and his loss has deeply affected everyone who knew him. Our thoughts, prayers, and heartfelt condolences are with Hayden's family, friends, teammates, and coaches at this unimaginable difficult time. As a club, we stand together in supporting those closest to him and remembering a young life taken far too soon. Hayden's family have set up a fundraising page to help give him the send-off he truly deserves. If you were able to support them in any way, no matter how small, it would be greatly appreciated. To donate, visit the Crowdfunder website." Concerns raised over a scheme to convert former pub into a shop. Concerns have been raised over a plan to convert a former pub into a shop. Plans would see the former Hargate Arms in Hargate Lane, West Bromwich, converted into a Morrison's Daily. The application by AJ Chumba for the shop and off licence asked for permission to open and sell alcohol from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day, which raised concerns from neighbours and ward councillors. Labour councillors Paul Moore and Amardeep Singh submitted an objection on behalf of Tantony Estate residents, saying they were concerned that selling alcohol early in the morning and late into the evening could lead to more noise and disturbance and antisocial behaviour. The objection said residents are particularly concerned that the premises, being a former public house, may reintroduce patterns of alcohol-related issues historically associated with such uses. The availability of alcohol for off sale from 6 a.m. daily raises concerns regarding early morning street drinking, increased antisocial behaviour and related disorder within nearby residential streets. Residents fear this could lead to increased nuisance, littering and potential low-level criminal activity. Sandwell Council's Licensing Committee will meet to decide on the application next Tuesday. Several other objections were made over its potential impact. A petition against the move said the former pub site was an unsuitable location for a late night shop. Mayor buoyed by manifesto of likely Starmer replacement. Richard Parker is in a chipper mood. Granted a front row seat for Andy Burnham's first major speech since the Prime Minister announced his resignation, the elected mayor for the West Midlands says he likes what he hears. "One of the mayors I was sitting very close to today spoke to me afterwards and said, 'This is great for you, Richard. Basically, Andy was turning your regional manifesto into a national one. Mr. Parker insists the man, being viewed as Britain's next PM, has a near identical view on the need for devolution, and reveals his officials are already working at making their case to Mr. Burnham's transitional team. Mr. Burnham, previously Mr. Parker's counterpart as Mayor of Greater Manchester, spoke of his desire to bring devolution across to the regions, including the setting up of a number 10 in the north. Mr. Parker said he had known Mr. Burnham since he was last in Parliament as MP for Lee, and twice contender for the Labour leadership, first defeated by Ed Miliband and later by Jeremy Corbyn. It looks hard to see this happening for a third time, and Mr. Parker believes he will be in a strong position to grab a larger slice of the national cake for the West Midlands. Andy and myself believe in the same things, and our priorities, if not exactly similar, they follow the same ambitions, he says. Whether it's on young people and skills, reindustrialisation, what we're doing on transport with the buses and also on housing. I made a commitment when I got elected for the biggest programme of affordable social housing in the West Midlands for the last 40 years or so. He's now going to do the same nationally. So I think his announcement is going to be the catalyst for some really ambitious programmes for delivery. Mr. Parker believes one major difference between a Burnham premiership and a Starmer one will be the focus on reform of the civil service. He says, "I'm convinced we need more ability to use resources more freely, but there's something else," he acknowledged, "which I don't think previous or even the current Prime Minister has. It's not just about devolving more, it's about the rewiring of the state. What he's going to need as a Prime Minister is to enforce every corner of Whitehall to make sure they deliver on the back of his commitments. I know as a mayor, my job is to set the direction of travel and my vision and landing points, but unless I've got people here who do the groundwork to deliver, the officers here are committed to it. Things don't happen." I think he's got absolute clarity of his sense of purpose, about his priorities. And now the next big job for him and the people around him is making sure that both the next government and Whitehall is geared up to deliver for him and for us and people here too, as well as a shared vision for regional government. Mr. Parker says, the other thing he shares with Mr. Burnham is the nature of the area he represents. Greater Manchester is the combined authority, most like this one, through demographics, through its history, its culture, its heritage, its industry, he says. At the moment, we're delivering over and above our commitments to government. So we're in a very good place by demonstrating to the government that we can deliver. What I'll be emphasising to Andy Burnham's transition team is that maybe we can do more, but more importantly, we can deliver at pace. Retailers selling e-scooters for commuting despite ban. They are barred from the roads, but big brands promote them for urban riding. Major British retailers have been selling e-scooters for commuting, despite warnings from police and coroners that it is illegal and puts riders at risk of serious injury or death. Brands such as Currys, Argos and Halfords, as well as online giant Amazon, used marketing pitches about urban riding, getting to work on time and long distance commutes to sell the electric vehicles. Under the current law, privately owned e-scooters and hoverboards are banned from public spaces, such as roads, cycle lanes and pavements, and can only be legally used on private land. But government figures shows that up to 950,000 e-scooters are now believed to be privately owned across England alone. In 2022, after a 14-year-old girl fell off her e-scooter and died under the wheels of a minibus, a coroner criticised retailers for selling the vehicles without proper warnings about the law, saying that without change there would be more deaths. In June, police forces across the country mounted a coordinated crackdown on illegal e-scooter use, and official data shows 10 people were killed and 1,484 injured in e-scooter collisions last year. Research by the Press Association has now revealed that retailers from major brands to specialist e-scooter sellers have been giving customers the impression that the vehicles can be used on the road. Misinformation could cause misuse, putting the lives of all road users at risk, said Tanya Braun, Director of External Affairs for Public Safety Campaign Group Living Streets. On a page of the Currys website, which advertises Segway e-scooters, customers are told they can purchase a fun, efficient means of getting around your local area. Some of the models on sale boast higher top speeds, so you can ensure you're not late for work, the page reads. On the Argos website, a page advertising adult electric scooters from brands including Pure, Segway, McLaren, and Zinc, suggested they offer smooth rides. Whether you're gliding to work or cruising for fun, it adds commuting just got a serious glow up. Amazon has on sale a £375 Miwen electric scooter, which is recommended for urban commuting. Adverts for e-scooters on the Halfords websites come with a legal warning, setting out it is illegal to use an e-scooter on a public road, pavement, cycle lane, or bridleway. But in the sales pitch for a £499 Pure Escape e-scooter, the retailer told customers it had cruise control for added relaxation across long-distance commutes, while Halfords is also selling an £899 McLaren e-scooter for urban riding. Ms. Braun said consumers must be made aware of the restrictions on private e-scooter use. Rental scheme operators have had the design of their e-scooters approved by the Department for Transport, and they know who is using their e-scooters and where. In contrast, it's likely that a person on a privately owned e-scooter will be using a more dangerous vehicle with higher speeds and will not be insured. Misinformation could cause misuse, putting the lives of all road users at risk. Under new law, rented e-scooters can be legally used on the roads by holders of a driving licence, but police have the power to stop private e-scooters, seize vehicles, and land the user with a fine or criminal prosecution for driving without insurance. After the 2022 inquest into the death of 14-year-old Fatima Abukar, East London coroner Graham Irvine issued a prevention of future deaths report to police, the government, and e-scooter retailers. He set out that Fatima had been riding a privately owned e-scooter without a helmet when she fell in front of a minibus. Argos includes prominent warnings about the law around e-scooters on each individual advert, and after being contacted by the Press Association, it edited its website to remove references in advertising material to commuting. Currys includes a similar legal warning at the bottom of the product information for the e-scooters, and it is now conducting a review of its website. Halfords says safety and legality of products are a priority throughout the sales process, and it offers advice to customers.
Hello, this is Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on the 2nd of July. Celebrations for Cafe's First Year. A community youth initiative funded by West Bromwich Building Society Foundation is celebrating its first year of supporting hundreds of local people and becoming a vital after-school space. Since opening last year at the YMCA Black Country Group's Coffee at the Clock, the YMCA Youth Cafe has recorded more than 3,000 attendees, with over 85 11 to 16-year-olds regularly taking part. Created as a safe and welcoming after-school space, the cafe gives young people somewhere to socialise, access support and take part in a variety of activities. The cafe, which is open on weekdays during term times, offers a relaxed environment where young people can build friendships, confidence and learn new skills. Jonathan Westhoff, trustee of West Bromwich Building Society Foundation, said, "We're incredibly proud to see how the Youth Cafe has developed over this first year." Building Society Here to Stay, as it toasts its latest milestone. By Beverly Rudmacher. The Black Country Building Society is marking 125 years in business this year, with a brand new branch opened in its hometown and a renewed commitment to in-person services. The Tipton and Coseley Building Society opened the doors to its new branch in Owen Street in Tipton on June the 17th, just 2 days after closing its long-running branch next door. The lender, an independent provider of savings and mortgage products, has transformed its former IT offices situated next to the branch into a new bricks and mortar building society with face-to-face cashiers, meeting rooms and digital screens. Customers were treated to tea and biscuits on the opening day at the new branch at 70 Owen Street, which held a low-key soft launch ahead of a bigger official celebration planned for September. CEO Adam Evatt said, "We've been on Owen Street since our very first beginnings in 1901. It's great that almost to the day of our anniversary we have opened an improved branch that's much brighter, fresher and reflects our long-term commitment to Tipton. We're definitely here to stay." Around 80 of the Building Society's employees are based in Tipton, where the upstairs offices have now been given a modern makeover. The new look headquarters has been given a total refresh with an open plan design, hot desks and energy efficiency in mind to meet the needs of a modern hybrid workforce. Mr. Evatt said, "This will be a collaboration area with a boardroom and booths for team meetings. We reached capacity from a headcount perspective 2.5 to 3 years ago, so we've been using a hybrid working method." He said it would have cost millions to relocate to a suitable space, and there wasn't anywhere local, so it was decided to open up the existing office area to create more space. The dated look of the old offices made it difficult to recruit people, he said, and there was nowhere to hold meetings. It wasn't practical. He added, "But we've been able to completely modernise it. It's fully energy efficient with sustainable materials used to be as environmentally friendly as we can be. The whole thing has been designed around creating as much space as possible for people to work together. I don't have an office. I will have a desk and I will move around. It's a much more modern way of working." He said as a CEO, he sees his role, which he assumed in 2024, as helping people to do the best job they can, and part of that is creating the right environment. Another priority has been ensuring customers can access face-to-face banking as well as logging in to their accounts digitally from the comfort of their armchairs. While many banks have been closing branches, the Tipton opened a completely new one in Codsall, and it has gone down a treat with customers who prefer a traditional approach to banking. The opening marked a commitment by the company to invest in what its customers want, a face-to-face presence as well as the latest digital banking facilities. The Tipton was founded in 1901 as the Tipton and District Permanent Benefit Building Society, with the aim of encouraging continuous and regular savings and enabling people to become homeowners, and that remains its main focus today. It employs a total of 121 people across its head office and 5 branches, located in Tipton, Coseley, Sedgley, Bilston and Codsall, and it has a total membership of around 37,000 people. One of 42 building societies operating across the UK, it differs from a bank as building societies reinvest their profits so customers receive better rates, and they do not pay out to external shareholders as they do not have any. In 2025, the society added £53 million in retail savings deposits, bringing total savings balances held to a record level of £577 million. As well as helping its customers to achieve its important financial goals, the society is big on giving back to the communities it serves. In 2025, it raised more than £10,000 for Dudley's White House Cancer Support Charity, which supports local people affected by cancer diagnoses, including carers and family members. Volunteers from the Tipton and Coseley Building Society also helped to maintain the charity's gardens, and the society donated laptops to the organisation to help save on the cost of replacing outdated equipment. The society also supports the Midland Langer Sewer Society and remains one of its daily street feeds each month, providing volunteers and enough supplies to prepare around 100 meals each time. In 2025, the Society gave £55,000 back to the community and made a formal commitment for future years to donate up to 5% of its profit before tax to charities and community organisations. Kind-hearted staff at the Tipton also dedicated an estimated 244 working hours in support of local volunteering projects. And the article is accompanied by a picture of the new Tipton branch, with blue and green and white balloons outside forming an arch, along with Tipton colleagues Nicola Shaw, CEO Adam Evitts, Josh Gill and Harjit Singh at the new branch opening, ready to cut the ribbon so that the door can be opened and let in customers. Music and fun at Heritage Day. A hospital's winter garden was filled with music, laughter and celebration for African and Caribbean Heritage Day. Hosted in the heart of Midland Metropolitan University Hospital, Smethwick, the event featured a saxophonist and performances from children's dance group Unity. One of the most moving moments came when Sister Samantha Wilson Hall shared a powerful poem about her grandparents' journey to England as part of the Windrush generation and their experience of becoming British citizens. Sister Samantha, from the Community Children's Palliative Nursing Team, said, "We are proud of our roots and to be part of our NHS family, where we work together irrespective of our colour, race or religion." Assault on woman in park probed. Dan Stacey. Police have launched an investigation after a woman found injured at Sandwell Valley Country Park is believed to have been sexually assaulted. Officers were called to the park at around 10:15 a.m. on Monday after the woman was discovered injured. West Midlands Police said early inquiries suggest she had been sexually assaulted and that personal items were taken from her. The woman was treated at the scene before being taken to hospital by paramedics for assessment. She has since been discharged and is being supported by specially trained officers. West Midlands Police confirmed officers would remain in the area as inquiries continued. A force spokesman said, "We're investigating after a woman was found injured in Sandwell Valley Country Park at around 10:15 a.m. on June the 29th. Inquiries are at an early stage, but we believe the woman had been sexually assaulted and items were taken from her. She was taken to hospital for assessment and has since been discharged and is being supported by specially trained officers as we work to establish what happened and who was responsible. We know this is a concerning incident, and our officers remain in the area as inquiries continue. Anyone with any information, or who was around at the time, should speak to officers or call us on 101, quoting log 1483 of June 29. West Midlands Ambulance Service confirmed it attended the incident. A spokesman said, "We responded to Park Lane, West Bromwich, following concerns for the welfare of a woman. One ambulance responded to the scene and she was conveyed to hospital for further checks. The incident comes just days after the body of a woman was recovered from a pool within Sandwell Valley Country Park on Saturday. Police previously confirmed that the death is not being treated as suspicious and that a file will be prepared for the coroner." Warning issued over disposable barbecues. West Midlands Fire Service have warned of the dangers of disposable barbecues following a blaze that tore through a family home in the Black Country. Emergency services rushed to the scene of the fire on St Luke's Road, Wensbury, just before 10 p.m. on June the 27th, quickly finding the house fully alight. Three fire engines and a 4x4 response vehicle attended the scene, crewed by teams from Wensbury, West Bromwich and Walsall. The fire was determined to have been caused by a disposable barbecue in the rear of a residential property, with the blaze spreading to several nearby fences. The fire affected two properties, causing smoke logging in both buildings. No casualties were reported, but the firefighters quenched the flames using hose reels. A fire spokesman said, "This was a fire started by a disposable barbecue in the rear garden of a residential property. The fire spread to several garden fences and affected two properties, causing smoke logging. Three fire engines and a 4x4 brigade response vehicle attended, crewed by firefighters from Wensbury, West Bromwich and Walsall. We left this incident at 12:10 a.m. The fire service has now warned of the dangers of disposable barbecues safely, warning to never leave the barbecue unattended. The fire service said, "Having barbecues should be safe and enjoyable, but it is all too easy to be distracted by friends and family while you are cooking. Never pour petrol, meths or other accelerants onto a barbecue. Some of the worst barbecue-related burns we see happen when people do this and the barbecue explodes in their face. Never leave the barbecue unattended. Keep a bucket of water or sand nearby for emergencies."
Hello, it's Rachel here, and I've got some recordings for you from the 3rd of July. Meeting over licence for shop in lottery ticket row delayed. Hearing for store accused on stealing winnings held up due to absent translator. By Christian Barnett. A decision over whether a 24-hour shop will be allowed to keep its licence following an investigation into a missing lottery reward has been delayed over an absent translator. Best One store in Market Place, Great Bridge, Tipton, was investigated by West Midlands Police after a staff member was accused of stealing a winning lottery ticket and not handing over the correct prize to a customer. West Midlands Police said the victim had been given £30 in winnings for the lottery ticket, only to realise later the prize should have been substantially higher. Sandwell Council's Licensing Committee met to review the shop's licence on Tuesday, but was forced to adjourn the meeting after a Tamil translator could not be secured for shop licence holder Vincent Shanmugajara Thamilsan. Duncan Craig, the solicitor representing Mr. Thamilsan, said while the shop owner spoke and understood English, the Tamil translator was required to ensure he carried out his job properly. Reform Councillor Carl Leach questioned the cost of hiring a translator and whether the hearing could go ahead without one. But after hearing legal advice, it was agreed to adjourn until July 10th. During an investigation into the alleged theft, Mr. Thamilsan, the licence holder and designated supervisor, told officers he was not the owner of the Great Bridge shop and could not access the CCTV, but changed his story when interviewed a week later. CCTV footage, which should have been kept for at least a month, had been recorded over, and West Midlands Police said the missing video had hampered its investigation into the missing ticket. Sandwell Council's Licensing Enforcement Officer said they had serious concerns about the shop and urged councillors to seriously consider revoking the licence. More homes for landslide estate after refusal overruled. By Christian Barnett. More homes can be built on an estate hit by a landslide after plans won approval from a government inspector. Dunedin Homes, the developer behind a 53-home estate off Hales Owen Road in Cradley Heath, was last year blocked by Sandwell Council from adding six more homes to the development. The estate, which was completed in 2020, has been plagued by issues, including several landslides that left a huge mound of earth blocking the road and cutting off a dozen homes. The developer appealed against the decision to the government planning inspectors and was successful in its bid to get the ruling overturned. The inspector David Kay disagreed with the council, saying the six homes would not result in overlooking or a loss of privacy for future occupants or neighbours. A report outlining the decision said, "I have found the proposal would not harm the character or appearance of the surrounding area, would not harm the privacy or outlook for occupants of adjacent properties, and would not harm the habitat or ecological value of the site of local importance to nature conservation or local nature reserve as locally designated areas of nature conservation." The 3- and 4-bedroom homes will be built on a pitch of land previously used as a storage yard and haulage road during the construction of the wider estate, around 150 metres away from Haydon Cross Drive, where landslides spilled over a retaining wall, leaving several residents blocked in. A total of 30 objections against the plans were lodged before Sandwell Council made a decision in 2025. Rejecting the proposal, the council's planners said the extra homes would have a significant impact on privacy and overlooking and would be overly dominant and overbearing. The council also said the plan's layout was cramped and poorly designed. The local authority added the application did not adequately recognise the nearby nature reserve, wildlife corridor or conservation sites. The subsidence in nearly Haydon Cross Drive was first seen 2 years ago when a tree fell in the nearby woods. Heavy rain and bad weather throughout the year came to a head in the run-up to Christmas, with a huge mound of earth leaving the road completely blocked. The tons of soil left the cul-de-sac cut off, and homeowners without access to their driveways. Alongside the article is a photograph with the caption, "A huge landslide at Haydon Cross Drive, Cradley Heath, has blocked residents' driveways and access," and shows the cul-de-sac from an aerial view with a large landslide that completely covers the road. Stabbed teenager's injuries described as life-threatening. A police investigation is underway after a teenager was stabbed in Oldbury. Emergency services were called to Market Street at around 12:15 p.m. yesterday following reports of an altercation involving a group of teenagers. A 19-year-old man was taken to hospital with injuries believed to be life-threatening. Officers have remained at the scene while inquiries continue, with detectives in the early stages of their investigation. Police have been speaking to people in the area as they work to establish exactly what happened. A West Midlands police spokesman said, "We know this will be worrying for residents in the local area, so would encourage anyone with any concerns to speak to one of our patrolling officers. If you have any information that could help our investigation, call 101, quoting incident number 2404 of July 2nd. Alternatively, make an anonymous report to Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111.
Hello there, it's Gavin. Bereaved dad demanding urgent action at Under Fire Hospital Trust. A bereaved dad whose son was stillborn at a West Midlands hospital is calling for urgent action against an Under Fire NHS trust. Tom Hender has written to a number of West Midlands MPs whose constituents are served by Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, SWBH, in the wake of a damning review of its maternity services. Tom and wife Eva, son Aubrey, was stillborn at City Hospital in 2022, and they believe the care received failed him and that their concerns weren't listened to. They added that complaints and concerns raised during the perinatal mortality review in 2022 were not acknowledged. After 4 years, the couple were successful in getting a repeat review in April 2026 and said this acknowledged some of their questions and concerns regarding elements of the care. City Hospital was replaced by the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital, which opened in Smethwick in late 2024. SWBH was one of 14 in the country investigated in Baroness Amos's final report of the Independent National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation. The report said the investigation painted a deeply concerning picture, with families and staff experiencing discrimination and the neonatal mortality rate exceeding that at comparable trusts by 5%. SWBH has apologised to families affected and said actions were being carried out to rebuild trust. But in his letter to MPs, Tom said he did not believe the trust was capable of turning things around and urged bosses to take action to prevent further deaths. In an open letter, trust executive Diane Wake said a number of changes had been instigated, including hiring a new director and head of midwifery, as well as 25 additional midwives. She said, "We are sorry to the women, babies and families whose experiences of our maternity and neonatal services did not meet the standards they have the right to expect. The report highlights areas where our care fell short, and we recognise the lasting and profound impact this has had on those affected. While the move to our new hospital has improved the physical environment for women and families, we recognise buildings alone do not change culture. Their report is clear that deeper cultural and organisational issues must be addressed, and we accept that responsibility."
Hello everyone, this is Linda reading from Saturday the 4th of July's Express and Star. Here we go. Bar bid to be Baggies Base Camp. A popular Algarve pub has opened its doors to travelling Albion fans for the pre-season tour of Portugal later this month. James Morrison's side will spend the week of July the 11th to the 18th near the southern city of Albufeira, a trip that finishes with a friendly open to supporters. The Raggies face off against promoted League One new boys Bromley at Estádio da Nora, home of CF Ferraris, north of Albufeira. On Friday, July the 17th, 7 p.m. kick-off, local time. Tickets for the Bromley clash are now available online and are priced at £15, £12.85 per person. Albion supporters have raced to take the rare opportunity to follow their side overseas, with the first opportunity to cheer on the Baggies abroad since the pre-season of 2019. Back then, an estimated 1,900 Albion fans travelled to Lanusia, near Benidorm, as Slaven Bilic's men lost 3-0 to Villarreal in a warm-weather training camp. The Baggies went on to secure promotion to the Premier League that term. Baggies supporters have snapped up flights and accommodation to southern Portugal to cheer on Morrison's men and enjoy the local amenities. And now a popular Albufeira pub has extended an invitation to Albion fans to use its services as a base camp for the trip. Broadway Pub, based in the city's old town, a short walk from the beach, are open well into the early hours of the morning and could be the perfect spot for Baggies fans to sample some of Albufeira's delights. The invitation was shared via Albion Bats, the Baggies Abroad travel service group, on social media. A post read, "To all WBA fans travelling to Portugal, the good people at the Broadway pub in Albufeira, Old Town, have invited us to use the bar as our base camp. See you all there on the Thursday and Friday, open until 4 a.m. Ticket details for the friendly against Bromley are yet to be confirmed by the club. Estádio da Nora is a 2,000 capacity home of CF Ferraris, a provincial club in the region. The Algarve Friendly is the first of three public Baggies friendlies open to supporters this summer. Morrison's men tackle Sheffield Wednesday behind closed doors at the FA's St George's Park base on July the 11th before jetting to Portugal. Albion are also in action back on home soil at Shrewsbury Town of League 2 on July the 25th. The final warm-up clash is a trip to Peterborough United of League 1 on August the 1st. Gym given the go-ahead after successful appeal. A plan to open a 24-hour gym in a former factory will now be allowed to go ahead after a government inspector overruled a council. The move by D1 Gyms to open in part of the former Trident Steelworks in Albion Road, West Bromwich, was rejected by Sandwell Council last year because it clashed with its ambition to use the land for employment. The government's planning inspectorate overturned the decision after the fitness firm lodged an appeal. The inspector, Chris Cowper, said the gym would bring numerous health benefits to the local area and could be incorporated into any wider future housing or employment plans by the council, as well as bring jobs. The report outlining the decision said, "As well as catering to the needs of athletes travelling from further afield, I have no cognate reason to doubt that the gym could provide a facility for the local community, which would be within easy walking or cycling distance of existing and proposed housing, and which would include fitness activities to help improve their general health and well-being. This is a significant benefit, given that Sandwell scores below the national average on number of health, activity and obesity indices." The 19-acre site in West Bromwich was earmarked for more than 740 homes in Sandwellhausen's plans, first adopted in 2012, but the site remains untouched by developers. The former warehouse, which would house the new gym, has been empty since 2023. The site is earmarked as employment land in the emerging Sandwell local plan, a blueprint setting out where homes and other developments would be preferred to be built in the borough up to 2041. Funny and heartwarming, Matilda the Musical is a hit. Talented young cast and unforgettable songs make show a night to remember. What an incredible night from start to finish. I took my daughters, Ada and Alice, to see Matilda, the musical, at the Birmingham Hippodrome, and they were completely mesmerised. We made a full evening of it by going to Las Iguanas beforehand, one of our favourite Birmingham spots, and it was a perfect way to kick off an unforgettable family night out. Inspired by Roald Dahl's much-loved book, Matilda the Musical tells the story of one extraordinary little girl with an extraordinary mind. Matilda Wormwood is a brave bookworm who uses her intelligence, imagination, wit and a little bit of magic to outsmart her neglectful parents and the terrifying Miss Trunchbull. It's funny, heartwarming and full of important messages about courage, kindness and standing up for what's right. One of the most impressive things about the production is the incredibly talented young cast. The Royal Shakespeare Company shares the demanding lead roles between several young performers, allowing them all to shine. The role of Matilda is shared equally by Madison Davis, Molly Hutton, Olivia Einmunger and Sana Kurahara, while the role of Bruce is shared by Oisin Lukapeg, Carter J. Murphy, Brodie Robson and Takunda Kamalo. For the performance we attended, Sana Kurahara played Matilda and was absolutely outstanding. She brought so much confidence, warmth and determination to the role. Oisin Lukapeg played Bruce brilliantly, and the famous chocolate cake scene had the entire audience laughing, cheering and clapping along. From the opening number we couldn't believe the talent on stage. Wow, these children can act, sing and dance. Every member of the young cast performed with so much energy and confidence that it was easy to forget just how young they are. Ada and Alice were glued to the stage throughout. The music by Tim Minchin is witty, clever and packed with catchy songs. We left the theatre singing When I Grow Up, Naughty and Revolting Children, and they've been stuck in our heads ever since. The choreography is spectacular, while the staging is wonderfully imaginative. The clever use of giant tumbling alphabet box creates a magical world that perfectly captures the playful spirit of Roald Dahl's story, without relying on elaborate scenery. Every scene feels fresh, inventive and full of surprises. One of my favourite parts of the musical is the brilliant story within the story. As Matilda tells her imaginative tale, you slowly realise it's closely connected to Miss Honey's own life. It's beautifully written, adds so much emotional depth and gives the whole show an extra layer that both children and adults can appreciate. Richard Hurst is fantastic as Miss Trunchbull. He perfectly balances comedy with just the right amount of menace. He was probably my favourite character of the night. His performance had the adults laughing while the children watched with wide eyes. Our youngest found a few moments a little scary, but she still absolutely loved Matilda and couldn't stop talking about her afterwards. The famous chocolate cake scene is every bit as funny as you'd hope, and the gymnastics scenes are incredible. The timing, athleticism and choreography are amazing, with huge cheers from the audience throughout. The running time is around 2 hours and 35 minutes, including the interval, but it flies by because there's always something happening. The humour is quick and clever, the songs are unforgettable, and the story keeps everyone engaged from beginning to end. It's easy to see why this Royal Shakespeare Company production has won more than 100 international awards and has been delighting audiences around the world for 15 years. It truly is one of the best family musicals you can see. We all left the Birmingham Hippodrome smiling, singing and talking about our favourite moments all the way home. It runs at Birmingham Hippodrome until August the 2nd. To book tickets, visit birminghamhippodrome.com. NHS communication overhaul will end patients chasing basic information. Patients will receive at least 3 weeks' notice for medical appointments under plans to overhaul how the NHS communicates with the public. People will also be able to track their referral from a GP to hospital specialists in the same way they would online shopping. NHS England Chief Executive Sir Jim Mackey said, "Navigating the health service has been like walking through treacle, and it must start delivering five-star customer service." Under the new standards, all patients will receive a confirmation on the NHS app when their GP referral has been accepted by hospital specialists and they have joined the waiting list. Regular updates will be given at least every 12 weeks, allowing patients to provide updates about their condition and giving advice on what to do if symptoms worsen. If patients need to reschedule at the last minute, hospitals are being asked to ensure a new appointment is sent within 28 days. Sir Jim said almost everyone has a story in their family about how navigating the NHS has been like walking through treacle, including cases where patients aren't even sure if they've been referred, which is clearly unacceptable. If we want to keep improving patients' experiences and satisfaction with the NHS, we have to fix the basics. And that starts with how we treat people even before they arrive for their treatment. Our communication with patients needs to be clear and easy to understand. We have to get away from making patients ask us multiple times to get the information they need and start delivering five-star customer service. These standards are by no means revolutionary. They are in simple and clear standards that should be the bare minimum the public can expect from our services. NHS Trusts will now be asked to publish an annual summary of their performance towards meeting the 8 standards, which were developed following consultation with expert groups. Health Secretary James Murray said, "For too long, patients have been left chasing the NHS for basic information on their treatment. That's not good enough. These new patient standards are the bare minimum and things the health service should already be providing patients. Clear confirmation when you're referred, regular updates while you wait, and proper notice before your appointment." Police arrest 3 people after stabbing. 3 people have been arrested in connection with a stabbing that took place on Thursday in the Black Country. The stabbing took place on Market Street in Albury. 2 17-year-old boys and 1 18-year-old were arrested overnight yesterday by police officers. All 3 remain in custody on suspicion of attempted murder while police continue to investigate, police said yesterday. The officers are still investigating the assault on a 19-year-old man who still remains in a critical condition at a local West Midlands hospital. Police have said that if anyone has any information that may help the case, then they are urged to contact them on 101 or by quoting incident number 2404 of 2nd of July. A Sandwell councillor has spoken of the harrowing moment she tried to save the life of the 19-year-old following the stabbing. Tuli Zeffi, a reform councillor who represents Langley Ward, said he came across the incident while travelling to the council house on Thursday afternoon. He said he immediately got out of his car and stayed with the 19-year-old, attempting to stem the bleeding and reassure him until paramedics arrived.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday, the 6th of July. Around 200 cannabis plants found in house. Police recovered around 200 cannabis plants from a property in the Black Country after officers executed a warrant and broke into a property last week. Neighbourhood officers forced entry to an address on Salop Road, Albury, on Thursday and found cannabis plants growing in several rooms within the property. Sandwell Police said that the electricity had been bypassed, but no one was found at the property. The force is now making inquiries to find out who was involved in the drugs production. Officers added that the cannabis plants would now be destroyed. It said cannabis farms pose a serious risk to the neighbourhoods they are active in. There is a risk of fire from the associated crime and antisocial behaviour that comes from them. Our teams across the West Midlands regularly carry out warrants at properties suspected of being involved in cannabis production. If you think there is something suspicious going on where you live, let us know by calling 101. Alternatively, give the information anonymously via Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. 10 crews battle Parkland blaze. Several fire engines raced to a blaze in West Bromwich on Friday afternoon. West Midlands Fire Service said it sent 10 crews to a big parkland fire between Westminster Road and Gordon Avenue in the Stonecross area of West Bromwich. Residents were urged to keep doors and windows closed. The public were also warned to avoid the area where possible. Owners of nearby local business Boston Baps, Craig Fallon, said it was the biggest fire he had seen. It had scorched green space and spread to nearby playing fields, he added. Are you living in a home with dangerous faulty electrics? Experts tell Lisa Salmon that too many people overlook key signs of problems. It's easy to ignore minor electrical niggles, like a blown fuse or a buzzing socket, in the hope they just won't happen again. But the reality is, there's a risk such issues could be a sign your home electrics are dangerous, and electrical experts warn that ignoring them could lead to serious problems, including electric shocks and fires. New research from the Electrical Certification and Training Body, the NICEIC, has found that 22% of property owners have an "I'll worry about it tomorrow" attitude to potentially dangerous electrical faults, including constant tripping, broken switches and flickering lights. And the same proportion haven't had their electrics checked by a professional in more than a decade, if at all. While 16% have no idea if the electrics in the property have ever been looked at by an expert. Ignoring electrical faults can allow relatively minor issues to develop into much more serious problems, including electric shock and fires, warns Paul Collins, NICEIC's technical director. So what are the warning signs to look out for with electrics in the home? Smell something fishy? Luke Osborne, technical director at Electrical Safety First, says common signs that your electrics may pose a fire risk include a fish-like smell coming from plug sockets, which can be a sign of components overheating inside. Discoloured sockets that are turning yellow can also be a sign of overheating. And if your overhead lights continue to flicker or your electricity regularly trips, this may be a sign of a fault of loose connections in your electrical system. If you're experiencing any of these telltale signs, we always recommend contacting a registered electrician to undertake a safety inspection, Osborne advises. And Paul Collins adds that buzzing from switches or sockets can also be a sign of an electrical problem. In kitchens and living rooms, especially where multiple appliances are often used at the same time, electrical systems are placed under significant demand. And he points out, any smell, sparks, buzzing, sounds, scorch marks, or socket outlets and switches that feel unusually warm should always be taken seriously. Likewise, if your circuit breaker regularly trips or fuses frequently blow, it's often a sign that something isn't right. Warning signs can become more frequent if your electrical system is aging, overloaded, or wasn't installed correctly, says Collins, and he stresses these issues rarely resolve themselves and can indicate underlying faults such as damaged wiring, loose connections, or overloaded circuits. If you notice any of these warning signs, stop using the affected equipment, if it's safe to do so, and contact an NICEIC registered electrician to investigate. Book an electrical MOT. Sometimes electrical issues can go unnoticed, hidden behind walls, under floors and above ceilings, where wiring and connections are out of sight. Because of this, problems are often invisible until warning signs appear, and sometimes there are no obvious signs at all. And he points out that the most reliable way to understand the condition of your home electrics is to have an Electrical Installation Condition Report, an EICR, carried out by an NICEIC registered electrician. An EICR is like an MOT for your home, providing a comprehensive health check of your electrical installations, he says. Electrical installations naturally deteriorate over time, and many faults aren't immediately visible. Addressing problems early is often simpler, safer, and less expensive than waiting until a failure or emergency occurs. An EICR assesses the condition of wiring, socket outlets, switches, consumer units, and other electrical equipment to identify and deteriorate damage or potential safety issues, says Collins. And Osborne stresses it will tell you if any hazards might be developing and allow you to address them before they become serious risk. We recommend having one of these checks once every 5 years. Avoid electrical DIY. A worrying 24% of homeowners have attempted to fix an electrical issue by themselves. But Collins warns against DIY electrical repairs, saying, if you do spot a warning sign or have concerns, I would urge people to contact a professional as soon as possible. DIY electrics are never worth the risk. If something goes wrong, there will be real and serious consequences for both your property and your safety. To find a registered electrician near you, visit NICEIC's Find a Tradesperson or Electrical Safety First Find, a registered electrician who can solve the problem and ensure your safety in the home in the longer term.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. News! Question 1. Which radio service was switched off last weekend after broadcasting for almost 100 years? Question 2. What was decriminalised last Monday after having been a crime for 2 centuries? Question 3. Which banking brand is being scrapped after 173 years on the British High Street? Sport. Question 4. During England's World Cup match against Mexico last week, which England defender was sent off in the second half, forcing the Three Lions to play with just 10 men? Question 5. Which driver has won the British Grand Prix the most times? Question 6. Who is captain of Wales men's rugby team? Remember when? Question 7. Star Wars was released. Elvis Presley died. The last Orient Express travelled from Paris to Istanbul, and Red Rum galloped to a third Grand National victory. But what was the year? Who am I? Question 8. Born in Surrey in 1978, I first came to public attention after appearing on Wogan aged 10, where I demonstrated an impressive knowledge of antiques. I transitioned to become a woman in 2001, starred in the documentary Little Lady Fauntleroy, and became known for my appearances on reality TV, including The Salon, Trust Me, I'm a Beauty Therapist, Big Brother's Bit on the Side, and Naked Attraction. But who am I? Question 9. A singer, I was born in Dover in 1987. I developed my style of singing after listening to soul artists such as Aretha Franklin. My debut album was The Soul Sessions in 2003, followed by Mind, Body and Soul in 2004. I competed as Sausage on the Masked Singer UK in 2021, which I won. But who am I? Local knowledge. Question 10. Name the comedian who has applied for a license to serve alcohol as part of plans to run a pub for a new television series. How's your knowledge in this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers to this week's quiz. News. Question 1. Which radio service was switched off last weekend after broadcasting for almost 100 years? The BBC's Long Wave Service, which has transmitted the shipping forecast and the Test Match Special. Question 2. What was decriminalised last Monday after having been a crime for 2 centuries? Rough sleeping. People experiencing homelessness and poverty will no longer be considered criminals. Question 3. Which banking brand is being scrapped after 173 years on the British High Street? Halifax. Sport. Question 4. During England's World Cup match against Mexico last week, which England defender was sent off in the second half, forcing the Three Lions to play with just 10 men? Jarrell Kwanzaa. Question 5. Which driver has won the British Grand Prix the most times? Lewis Hamilton. Question 6. Who is captain of Wales men's rugby team? Dewey Lake. Remember when? Question 7. Star Wars was released. Elvis Presley died. The last Orient Express travelled from Paris to Istanbul, and Red Rum galloped to a third Grand National victory. But what was the year? 1977. Who am I? Question 8. Born in Surrey in 1978, I first came to public attention after appearing on Wogan aged 10, where I demonstrated an impressive knowledge of antiques. I transitioned to become a woman in 2001. Starred in the documentary Little Lady Fauntleroy and became known for my appearances on reality TV, including The Salon, Trust Me, I'm a Beauty Therapist, Big Brother's Bit on the Side and Naked Attraction. But who am I? Lauren Harris. Question 9. A singer, I was born in Dover in 1987. I developed my style of singing after listening to soul artists such as Aretha Franklin. My debut album was The Soul Sessions in 2003, followed by Mind, Body and Soul in 2004. I competed as Sausage on the Masked Singer UK in 2021, which I won. But who am I? Joss Stone. Local knowledge. Question 10. Name the comedian who has applied for a license to serve alcohol as part of plans to run a pub for a new television series. Joe Lycett. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Albion fixtures for 2026. Season kicks off on the 8th of August, which is in the EFL Cup, away to Rotherham at 5:30, the 8th of August. Next match, away to Norwich City, 3:00 kick-off. 23rd of August, at home, against Burnley, kick-off 12 o'clock. 29th of August, away to Middlesbrough, kick-off 12:30. 2nd of September, at home to Charlton, kick-off 19:45. 5th of September, home against Watford, 3 o'clock kick-off. 9th of September, away to Derby County, kick-off 19:45. 12th of September, home against QPR, kick-off 12:30. 20th of September, away to Wolves, kick-off 12 o'clock. 10th of October, home against Birmingham City, kick-off 3 o'clock. 13th of October, away to Wrexham, kick-off 19:45. 17th of October, home against Blackburn Rovers, kick-off 3 o'clock. 24th of October, away to Preston, kick-off 3 o'clock. 31st of October, away to West Ham, kick-off 3 o'clock. 3rd of November, home against Southampton, kick-off 19:45. 7th of November, home against Millwall, kick-off 3 o'clock. 21st of November, away at Swansea, kick-off 3 o'clock. 25th of November, away to Bolton, kick-off 19:45. 28th of November, home against Bristol City, kick-off 3 o'clock. 5th of December, away to Portsmouth, kick-off 3 o'clock. 8th of December, home to Cardiff City, kick-off 19:45. 12th of December, away to Stoke, kick-off 3 o'clock. 19th of December, home against Sheffield Wednesday, kick-off 3 o'clock. 26th of December, away to Lincoln City, kick-off 3 o'clock. 29th of December, home against Preston, kick-off 19:45. We'll do 2027 nearer that year.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for the audio described TV programmes for the week beginning Saturday 11th and ending Friday 17th of July 2026, written by John and read by Diane. The World Cup and Wimbledon do continue during this week, so there is some uncertainty to the exact schedules for BBC One, BBC Two and ITV One. On Saturday the 11th, Bargain Hunt is from County Antrim at 1:15 on BBC Two. Wimbledon coverage is on BBC One from 12:20 until 7 p.m. This isn't audio described, but the commentary should help you understand the state of play. The afternoon film on BBC Two is the Hitchcock thriller Vertigo, where an innocent man is drawn into the world of espionage. It's on BBC Two at 4:25. A widowed cleaner visits Paris after becoming obsessed with a designer dress in Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, the early evening film on Channel 4 at 6:45. Dylan wakes up with a hangover on a hotel bathroom floor and Faith's first post-maternity shift leads to a turning point. Casual date on BBC One at 8:10. If BBC One shows football, or at 8:50 if it doesn't. There's a classic episode of Dad's Army where the platoon are asked to guard a U-boat crew before they are transferred to a prisoner of war camp. BBC Two at 8:20 is where to catch this great episode.
How about ending the day with a quiz? The 1% Club is on ITV1 at 10:45 p.m. Now on to Sunday the 12th. More key people are put under the spotlight on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg on BBC One at 9 a.m. Wimbledon continues from 1:05 until 8:15 p.m. and may cause later programmes to run late or change. Projects in Norfolk and Coventry feature in Homes Under the Hammer on BBC One at 11 o'clock. Bargain Hunt looks at items that connect fairgrounds and circuses. It's on BBC One at 11:30. The period romantic drama Pride and Prejudice is the afternoon film on BBC Two at 4:25. Or, if you prefer a musical, ITV is showing the Summer of Love and school film Grease with Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. ITV One at 6:50 is the time and place to catch this classic film. Would you like to cool down in this still continuing heatwave? Channel 4 will go around Alaska as they take you cruising to the ends of the earth at 7 this evening. There's also a new series of The Piano on Channel 4 starting at 9 p.m, presented by Claudia Winkleman, Mika, and guest Judge Tiffany Poon. Set in Scotland, D.I. Kennedy is faced with her most unusual and horrific case yet. The new crime drama, The Dark, is on ITV One at 9 tonight. There's a new mystery series starting on BBC One at 9:15. I, Jack Wright, follows a family after their father apparently commits suicide. Part 2 follows at 10:30. Now a look at programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. The following are on BBC One: Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, Bargain Hunt at 12:15, Rick Stein's Australia at 2:30, Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. but 3:15 on Friday. Now on the other channels, Dickinson's Real Deal on ITV One at 2, Just One Thing, suggesting a small change with large benefits, is on BBC Two at 6:30. Two episodes of Heartbeat on ITV Three, starting at 5:50 and 6:55 p.m. The soaps are EastEnders on BBC One at 7:30, but may change if football is shown. Emmerdale on ITV One at 8 all week. Coronation Street, ITV One, 8:30 all week. All soaps are subject to changes dependent on the World Cup football. Now back to the weekdays, starting with Monday the 13th. Kelvin shears his first sheep in Fletcher's Family Farm on ITV One at 7. It's Monday, so that's quiz night, with Mastermind on BBC Two at 7:30 and University Challenge also on BBC Two but at 8:30. A second body is found, leading to more questions in The Dark, which continues on ITV One at 9. Also at 9, Chris Packham embarks on a quest to explain how life on Earth has evolved over 4 million years, starting with the African elephant. Evolution is on BBC Two at 9. Part 3 of I, Jack Wright continues on BBC One at 9:15, and Part 4 is on at 10:30. Bob and Paul accept an invitation to fish for bream at Burghley House in Mortimer and White House Gone Fishing on BBC Two at 10. How do first-time house buyers get on the property ladder? Uba Butler performs a range of stunts and tricks designed to help some of them get onto that elusive first ring. How to Trick Your Way onto the Property Ladder is on Channel 4 at 10. Now on to Tuesday the 14th. If the BBC One doesn't show football, we follow Laura, who is flying her late husband's hot air balloon for the first time at a festival held in his name. Our Lives, Flying Without Wings is on BBC One at 7. A new series of The Great British Sewing Bee starts at 8 on BBC One if there's no football on 1. It's the quarter-final, the teams bake afternoon tea desserts and Circus of Horrors themed piñatas filled with edible delights. Bake Off, The Professionals on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. BBC Four is remembering Penelope Keith, starting with The Dame reflecting on her role in To the Manor Born at 8. This is followed by an episode of The Comedy at 8:15 and then The Good Life at 8:45. And finally, Penelope stars in Hay Fever at 9:15. Unfortunately, this isn't audio described, unlike the previous programmes. Howard and Sarah plan to build a sleek, angled, metallic floating home to resemble a boat on a tidal estuary near Worthing. With a budget of $385,000, how will this project unfold? Grand Designs is on Channel 4 at 9. Now for Wednesday the 15th. If BBC One showed football last night and doesn't show it tonight, the evening will be Our Lives Flying Without Wings on BBC One at 7, The Great British Sewing Bee starting at 8, Kirsty and Phil in Scotland looking for houses around Stirling for Gwyneth and James and Glasgow for Phil, Lorraine and Emma. Location, location, location is on Channel 4 at 8 tonight. Paramedics come to the aid of a 65-year-old HGV driver who has suffered a cardiac arrest and a Hillingdon man who suffered severe burns. Ambulance code red is on Channel 5 at 8. The adventurer travels from the Peloponnese Peninsula to the northern mountains of Greece, meeting rebel monks and conservationists who are caring for an injured bear cub. Greece with Simon Reeve is on BBC Two at 9, assuming BBC One doesn't show football. Antoine and Maureen put their getaway on hold when there's a murder at the local university. Murder in Provence, starring Roger Allam, is on ITV Three at 10. Now for Thursday the 16th. Fabergé or Faubergé is the subtitle to this opening episode of Fake or Fortune. Tonight, Fiona and Philip investigate a Fabergé flower which is believed to have belonged to royalty and is possibly worth a small fortune. Fake or Fortune on BBC One at 8. Will Peter and Julia still love their former post office after it's been renewed and renovated? Find out in George Clark's Remarkable Renovations on Channel 4 at 8. What did it take for Gustave Eiffel to build the French landmark which bears his name? Eiffel Tower, Building the Impossible, chronicles Eiffel's technical and architectural adventure to build the tower. This is on BBC Four at 8 p.m. Toby Jones investigates his family, discovering his three-time great-grandmother set up one of the first drama schools. What will his father's side reveal? Who Do You Think You Are is on BBC One at 9. How did digital forensics help uncover a fascination with blades that led to the murder of 15-year-old Harvey Wilgus? Find out in Murder Case, The Digital Detectives on Channel 4 at 9. There's some nostalgia with a look at the genuine friendship between Stan and Oliver. Laurel and Hardy, Their Lives and Magic is on Sky Arts at 9. And finally, on to Friday the 17th of July. A new crime drama starting at 2 p.m. Hairdresser Lily Petal leaves the city to open a salon in a village, but finds herself solving mysteries. The Hairdresser Mysteries on BBC One at 2 p.m. This new series follows doctors offering treatments to high net worth clients like groom-to-be Luke, who invests £30,000 in a new smile ahead of his wedding. Surgery Secrets of the Super Rich is on Channel 4 at 8. The Celebrity Armchair Critics review this week's programmes in Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 9. American college student Amanda Knox travels to Italy to study abroad. Then in part 2 at 10 o'clock, the police try to break Amanda and Raphael. Follow how she gets on in this US true crime drama, The Twisted Tale of Amanda Knox, on ITV 1 at 9. In a new comedy, Sue's husband has died and now her son is moving out, so he decides to buy her a robot care provider. Android is on BBC One at 9:30. Austin continues on BBC One at 10:40. Austin misreads dinner as a date, and at 11:05, Austin battles cultural branding. The Late Night Film on BBC One is a coming-of-age comedy. After taking magic mushrooms, Elliot meets the 39-year-old old-ass version of herself, who doles out advice about family, life and love. Teenage Elliot starts to reconsider what lies ahead. My Old Ass is the late film on BBC One at 11:35 tonight. We do hope you find something of interest in this week's suggestions.
This is Gilly with the radio listings compiled by Angela. Hopefully, the suggestions for the week ahead will prove entertaining and interesting. To start, these are the programmes serialised from Monday to Friday. Book of the Week is Cash Cow by Alev Scott. It's an examination of the fertility industry and the commodification of the female body. On Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m, repeated at 12:30 a.m. New Storytellers features winners of the Charles Parker Prize for Best Student Radio Feature. Catch it on Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. Radio 3's Composer of the Week is Samuel Barber. Radio 3 at 4 p.m. Kane by Edson Burton and read by Lewis Shepherd is a coming-of-age story set in an alternative 21st century Bristol. Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. Now, a selection of programmes from Saturday to Friday. Starting with Saturday, Test Match Special, England play New Zealand. Ball-by-ball commentary is on Radio 5 Live from 10:45 a.m. Radio 4's drama today is part 2 of The Master Builder by Henrik Ibsen. It's on at 3 p.m. More sport and Radio 5 Live's coverage of the tennis at Wimbledon is at 4:15 p.m. Opera on 3, The Marriage of Figaro, comes from the Royal Opera House. It's on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. And in How Boarding Schools Shaped Britain, Nikki Campbell explores the evolution of boarding schools as they balance their social history with the demands of the modern world, on Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. Sounds of the 80s is presented by Gary Davis on Radio 2 at 6 p.m. Moving on to Sunday, and Radio 5 Live's coverage of Wimbledon starts at 2 p.m. And listen to some gentle music in Summer Evenings with Gareth Malone. It's on Classic FM at 6 p.m. Dear Gilbert, Dear Gordon is a fascinating selection of World War II letters written between two friends. Tune in to Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. And on Radio 3, Words and Music features music, poetry and prose for these balmy summer nights. Find it on Radio 3 at 7:45 p.m. Starting the week on Monday, The Return of Sherlock Holmes sees more stories by Arthur Conan Doyle of The Great Detective. Radio 4 Extra at 11 a.m, repeated 5 p.m. Church Going with Giles Fraser explores the state of Christianity in England. It's on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. Radio 3's In Concert features works by Elgar and Mahler. Radio 3 at 3:30 p.m. And In You're Dead to Me, the comedy podcast explores the cult of saints in Northern Europe. It's on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. Classic comedy in I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue, as always on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. On Radio 5 Live, the World Cup coverage continues at 7 p.m. Classic FM's Composer Carousel with Zeb Soans explores the music of Sibelius. It's at 9 p.m. Moving on to Tuesday, and the Radio 4 drama Our Friends in the North continues with Peter Flannery's adaptation of the highly acclaimed TV series on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Coverage of the World Cup continues on Radio 5 Live at 7 p.m. Radio 3 In Concert features works by Rachmaninoff and Scriabin at 7:30 p.m. And Peter White presents In Touch, the programme for visually impaired people, on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. Next to Wednesday, and drama Young PC follows the story of Paula Young, a newly qualified police officer. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 11 a.m. Classical Live on Radio 3 highlights works by Grieg and Vaughan Williams. It's at 1 p.m. More drama with Keeping the Wolf Out, the third of three episodes on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Relive the 1981 Ashes with Mike Brierley on Radio 4 Extra from 6:30 a.m. In Ivo Graham's Obsessions, comedian Ivo Graham explores the nation's weird and wonderful obsessions. Comedy on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. World Cup coverage continues on Radio 5 Live at 7 p.m. The Small Miracle by Paul Gallico, the story of a small boy, a donkey, and a journey to Rome, is on Radio 4 Extra at 9 p.m. Round off the evening with music in the folk show with Mark Radcliffe, Radio 2 at 9 p.m. On to Thursday, and in Sliced Bread, this week the podcast compares washing up cloths and sponges for hygiene. Radio 4 drama is Nothing is Normal. A Tehran taxi driver tries to ply his trade. Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Works by Barber, Copeland and Bernstein feature on Radio 3's In Concert at 7:30 p.m. More World Cup coverage is on Radio 5 Live from 8 p.m. And The Country Show rounds off the evening on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. And finally to Friday. Radio 3 features the Proms special day from 6:30 a.m. leading to the opening night of the Proms at 7 p.m. Radio 3 has its countdown with a series of special programmes. In the Radio 4 drama Limelight, Central Intelligence, the second of 10 episodes, it is 1964 and the Cold War is at its height. 2:15 p.m. Radio 4. And the topical comedy impressions show Dead Ringers is at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. In John Simpson's Dictators, the reporter recalls dictators he has reported on over the decades. It's on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. And finally, I Always Take Long Walks is a drama starring Judi Dench. A woman whose husband is addicted to cricket shares her thoughts. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 9 p.m. Happy listening, stay cool and enjoy the radio.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday the 7th of July. Arsonist travelled by train and tram to carry out killer attack. Family of victims speak of horrendous impact of arson by man in horror film t-shirt. This article is by Matthew Cooper. An arsonist has been handed a 25-year jail term after setting light to West Midlands home in an utterly random house fire while wearing a Nightmare on Elm Street t-shirt. Andrew Gorrell apologised to the family of his victims as he was led away to serve his sentence. He had travelled from his home in Wales to the Black Country to carry out random fire attacks. One of them was the home of 82-year-old John Edwards, who died in hospital 2 weeks later. The 55-year-old from Saltney in Flintshire, North Wales, was found guilty in February of murder, two counts of causing grievous bodily harm with intent. He was also convicted of attempting to cause grievous bodily harm with intent and arson with intent to endanger life. The judge said victim personnel statements from family members, including one of Mr. Edwards' grandchildren, showed that the impact of what Gorrell had done was absolutely horrendous. Mr. Edwards died of his injuries after the wheelie bin fire spread to his home in Holyhead Road, Wednesbury, in May last year. Judge Michael Chambers KC was told by prosecutor Rachel Brand KC that Gorrell had a history of offences involving fire. When in his late teens, he was given a 12-month custodial sentence in 1990 at Knutford Crown Court in Cheshire for setting fire to a club while working as a glass collector. The court heard Gorrell has a long history of alcohol abuse and had been drinking before setting the fatal fire and three other nearby wheelie bin blazes. Passing concurrent jail sentences of up to 12 years for offences other than murder, the judge told him, "No sentence I can impose can put the clock back, nor should it be viewed as an attempt to put a value on a human life." You travel by train from Chester to Wolverhampton, and then in the earliest hours of the morning you took a tram to Wensbury. Why you were going there has never been fully explained. You have elected not to give evidence. But once there, you quite deliberately set a number of fires. The judge says he was satisfied the girl had an interest in fire due to three factors, including that he was wearing a t-shirt displaying a reference to a film, Nightmare on Elm Street, which fire is a prominent feature. He told Garrell the occupant suffered agonising injuries and ultimately in relation to John Edwards' death. Before he died, he had a horrendous experience. I'm afraid I'm not persuaded of much remorse or regret in relation to what happened. It was clearly an evil, random attack, the reason for which is not clear. As he was led out of the dock, Garrell thanked the judge and turned to the family members saying, "I am really sorry." Garrell's trial was told that Mr. and Mrs. Edwards' two adult sons, Carl, 60, and Mark, 57, were both staying the night at their parents' home on the night of the attack. Banks and building societies leapfrogging shops for trust. Nationwide beats off John Lewis in UK-wide survey of customer satisfaction. Banks and building societies have overtaken shops for the first time in a long-running survey of customer satisfaction. The top spot for the banking sector as a whole came as Nationwide Building Society was named in research as the top brand for customer service. Retail has traditionally led sectors for customer satisfaction since the UK Customer Satisfaction Index, the UKCSI, was launched in 2008. The Institute of Customer Service, which publishes the index, said the retail industry's traditional dominance reflects its long-standing focus on competitive positioning, personalisation and responsive customer service. But its latest index found that banks and building societies had overtaken retail as the highest performing sector for customer service, surpassing it for the first time since the UKCSI started. Banks and building societies as a sector received a score of 82 out of 100. Non-food retail scored 81 and food retail scored 80.6. Customers are asked in the research to rate their experience of dealing with specific organisations in the previous 3 months. They rate one organisation that they had experience with in a particular sector. The Institute of Customer Service said it attributes the improvement for the banks and building societies sector to the growing emphasis placed on customer satisfaction, loyalty and retention by the best performing banks and building societies in recent years. Named in the latest index as the top brand for customer service, Nationwide Building Society received a score of 87.3 out of 100. It was followed by John Lewis, which was second with 87.1, and First Direct, which scored 86. In November 2025, Nationwide pledged to keep all its branches open until at least 2030. It said in November that it has seen a particular increase in account openings in location where it has been the last branch in town. In May 2026, the Building Society announced details of its latest fair share payments, totaling around £440 million, and is going to around 4.4 million eligible Nationwide members. Stephen Noakes, Group Retail Director at Nationwide Building Society, said, "As a mutual, we're able to put members first, whether that's through our commitment to keeping every branch open, continued investment in digital services, or sharing success directly with eligible members through our £100 fair share of payment for this fourth year running. Our colleagues work hard every day to support members however they choose to bank with us, and we are pleased to see that reflected in these results." Joe Corson, Chief Executive of the Institute of Customer Service, said, "Customer satisfaction with banks and building societies has been improving steadily. For some time now, in what has been a long-term turnaround for an industry whose reputation was severely damaged with the financial crisis, the sector has led the way in app development, with many providers now offering an excellent digital experience for routine transactional elements, combined with well-trained, motivated and empowered employees for more complex requirements. regaining trust has been paramount. It's also likely that the consumer duty has played a role in ensuring financial service business focus on the customer experience, specifically in the boardroom. Andrew Gore, Head of Savings, Consumer and Insight at the Building Societies Association, the BSA, said, "It's great to see banks and building societies recognised for improved customer service. Customers want the convenience of great digital banking alongside the reassurance of being able to speak to someone face-to-face. And building societies' continued investment in branches, telephone and digital services is helping to build the trust and confidence that people value." The UK CSI tracks 13 sectors across the UK economy, all of which saw an increase in customer satisfaction compared with last year. The index also found the proportion of people who feel better off compared with a year ago has fallen from 38 to 35%. People are also less willing to consider spending on big ticket purchases, a sign that concerns remain about the state of the UK economy. Closure order issued by council on shop selling illegal goods. A Black Country shop has been closed down for selling illegal goods, a council has said. Sandwell Council, working in partnership with West Midlands Police, has obtained a closure order in Cradley Heath as part of a strengthening approach to tackling illegal activities and protecting local high streets. The joint operation took place this week following an 8-month-long intelligence-led investigation. It forms part of an ongoing action to disrupt criminal behaviour and ensure businesses operate lawfully following residents' concerns about activity in the area. Sandwell Council posted, "We've closed down a shop in Cradley Heath for selling illegal goods. We are committed to stopping illegal activities in our towns. It's just the beginning of the action we're taking to make sure our high streets are safe for everyone." The council added it had successfully asked the court for the maximum closure of 3 months. The government has launched a 1-month consultation on the duration of closure orders under the Antisocial Behaviour Crime and Policing Act 2014. The proposal is to amend the maximum duration of a closure order to 12 months, and Sandwell Council says it fully supports this. Council leader, Councillor Ray Knox, said, "Our high streets should be a destination for Sandwell residents to enjoy, and people rightly expect their communities to be safe, lawful and welcoming places, and that's exactly what we are working to deliver. This week's operation demonstrates clear coordinated action with West Midlands Police to tackle illegal activity and hold these responsible to account. We are increasing visible enforcement and taking firm action where there is evidence of wrongdoing." Councillor Bob Jones added, "We know the impact this kind of activity can have on local communities and legitimate businesses. That is why we are taking a proactive approach, working with police and partners to disrupt criminal behaviour and support businesses that are doing the right thing." Sandwell Police Inspector Amrit Jitter said, "We are continually working with our partners to listen to concerns and tackle illegal activity. If we receive information about crime linked to shops, then we will always fully investigate and look to identify and prosecute anyone involved. The more evidence and intelligence we receive means we have a better opportunity of combating any illegal activities." Fire officers back from helping rescue efforts following earthquake. 7 members of West Midland Fire Service have returned home safely after helping the international rescue effort in Venezuela following the earthquakes which devastated the country. Members of the service were among 70 UK fire and rescue service personnel deployed after the offer of help from the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office was accepted by the Venezuelan. The team arrived in South America on June the 27th and landed in the UK at Birmingham Airport at around 10:30 a.m. on Sunday. Welcomed back by WMFS Assistant Chief Officer Steve Ball. During the deployment, the team conducted several missions, which included building searches using specialist equipment and dogs, assessing humanitarian needs and supporting other search teams. A UK International Search and Rescue, ISAR, incident room was established at WMFS HQ and staffed throughout the deployment to provide critical support to colleagues on the ground. The fire service said that while deployments often highlighted the operational activities carried out, they are only possible because of the extensive training planning and preparation undertaken long before a team is mobilised, from maintaining specialist capabilities and equipment to ensuring personnel are ready to deploy at short notice. Significant effort goes into preparing for international response operations. During the deployment itself, the incident room played a vital role in coordinating staffing, welfare logistics and operational support, helping to ensure the team could carry out their work safely and effectively. Chief Fire Officer Simon Turhill said, "I would like to thank every member of the UK ISAR team who took part in this deployment in Venezuela. They demonstrated the professionalism, compassion and resilience that our people are known for, working alongside international partners in incredibly challenging circumstances. I'm equally grateful to everyone back at our headquarters who supported the operation from the incident room. Their planning, coordination and round-the-clock logistical support played a vital role in our work throughout. We are incredibly proud of everyone involved." Poignant Joel Memorial aims to inspire future generations. This article is by James Vukmirovich. A new and very poignant tribute to the life of a young man who loved football has been unveiled on the anniversary of his death. The Birmingham Football Association officially unveiled the memorial to Joel Richards at Rahal Lane in Great Barr on June the 28th, with his mother Susie and brother Owen both present at the unveiling. The installation is a silver plaque crafted with perforations to make an image of Joel in a referee's shirt, with an inscription below which says "Tribute to Joel" and contains the message "Keep blowing that whistle, Joel" at the bottom. It was installed near the Astro Pitch facility to mark the 11th anniversary of Joel's death in the Souars Tunisia massacre, which also claimed the lives of his grandfather Pat and uncle Adrian on June the 26th, 2015. For Susie Richards, it was an emotional day. She said seeing it showed how loved and respected Joel was and would ensure his memory lived on. She said the striking installation is far more than a plaque. It is lasting tribute to Joel's life, his love of football and his positive impact he continues to have. It stands as a permanent reminder of his character, dedication and the legacy that continues to inspire so many. Seeing it for the first time was an emotional moment. She added, "Joel's passion for football lives on, and through the work of Smile for Joel and the Development Fund, his legacy continues to make a difference in communities across the country. This memorial ensures that everyone who visited these pitches were reminded of the remarkable young man behind that legacy. On behalf of everyone at Smile for Joel, thank you to Birmingham FA for this beautiful and meaningful tribute. Your support ensures Joel's memory continues to inspire future generations."
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about International Assistance Dog Day. Unusually, this awareness day, the 4th of August, is paired with the original celebratory week, starting the first Sunday in August since 2009. All thanks to American founder Marcy Davis, who continues to sponsor the event, raising awareness via her Working Like Dogs website, radio podcasts and book of the same name. Marcy is an individual living with paraplegia and a permanent wheelchair user who became partnered with a mobility assistance dog. Just to clarify, physical dog tasks basically consist of opening and closing doors, including auto buttons and elevators, laundry from washing machines, fetching the phone, helping with undressing and general picking up, and handling of items to the partner. Marcy strives for hard-working dogs and support staff trainers to be recognised for their part in transforming lives of people with disabilities and roles in other welfare assistance jobs. This is particularly important when accessibility is not met by society. In 2025, a UK survey stated 79% of partnered assistance dogs were denied access to a public place. These dogs, with their extraordinary talents, cover such a vast range of support. Visual guidance, hearing, and medical alerts for those with epilepsy and diabetes, etc., right through to autism, PTSD, and depression. Many dogs are remarkably adept at detection work too, in areas of biosecurity, cancer research, emergency services, such as search and rescue, even recovery abroad after natural disasters like earthquakes. The uniformed services use sniffer dogs side by side with personnel for contraband, explosives, criminal tracking, and even now, utility companies are finding water leaks and electrical faults underground, plus surveying buildings for dry rot. One thing these working dogs have is intelligence, and the right kind of scenting nose. The top breed choices tend to be Beagle, Belgian Malinois, Border Collie, English Springer Spaniel, German Shepherd, Golden and Labrador Retrievers. Some less common are Hoovervaart, similar to the originator search dog, St. Bernard, and Newfoundland, a particularly large, heavy breed adept at water rescue because they can easily rope tow a dinghy with people on board. In fact, there are around 7,000 registered with Assistant Dogs UK, and approximately 3,700 of those are guide dogs. An innovative organisation which began in 1931 with two equally determined ladies, Rosamund Bond and Muriel Crook, who trained the first German shepherds, called Folly, Meta, Judy and Flash, while operating from a garage in Wellesley, Merseyside. Interestingly, four different German Shepherd guide dogs, Luthi, Podo, Rita, and Aster, were taken by their pioneer owner, John Forbes Gordon, all the way to Japan 7 years later to establish the foundations of that country's Guide Dog Association. Indeed, there is a misconception that all guide dogs today are Labradors, and only those with total sight loss are eligible. Whereas in reality, people with several variations of visual impairment qualify, and they still use the go-to German Shepherds, along with Golden Retrievers and Poodles, though mostly crossbred for health, intelligence and temperament reasons. Whatever the breed, they are still a costly investment, around £102,000 to raise, train and support a guide dog partnership from birth to retirement, usually 9 or 10 years of working life. The British politician, Lord David Blunkett, has total sight loss and had 7 guide dog partnerships throughout the years, all helping with accessing his government career and life in general. His latest, Barley, a black Labrador German Shepherd cross, has even been made an official member of Britain's largest workers, GMB, union. Although this is a unique award, the Service Dogs UK charity does shortlist and hand out Assistance Dog Medal of Honour UK awards annually for dogs that have proven exceptional support in the lives of individuals with various disabilities. The winner for 2025 was Okho, the Labrador supporting Chloe Hammond, the only working nurse in Britain to use both a dog and wheelchair. The 3 runners-up candidate partnerships covered owners with autism and balance issues, POTS fainting episodes, and PTSD. Now for some fun facts about how dogs are adaptable. Did you know that search and rescue dogs can sniff down trails of lost people on land, air scent into the wind in awkward places like mountains, and go on boats to also detect people in the water and at sea? A stalwart, one-eyed dog called Woody, a red fox Labrador, performs port duties against biosecurity threats on board boats on Rathlin Island off Northern Ireland, already having rid the island of non-native ferrets, which were introduced in the 1980s and previously decimated the RSPB seabird colonies. Those exceptionally rare truffles used in expensive culinary dishes grow buried beneath specific tree roots and can also be found by dogs in the UK. One company runs a six-week course in Tunbridge Wells, Kent, to make a suitable pet into a truffle-scenting dog. Research chemists have shown that trained sniffer dogs can detect fire accelerants, for example, petrol, in very small amounts, as little as 1/1,000,000,000 of a teaspoon. No wonder the fire brigade used dogs to detect possible unlawful activity. Finally, although medical alert dogs exist and can screen virus carrier patients in hospitals for certain contagious diseases, there are new efforts to supplement their scenting dogs' basic training to early detect COVID-19. So, could assistance dogs be the answer to some socially impactful situations in the future? May you pause and appreciate whatever support is there in your life.
DNF Soundings.
Now, something I didn't mention at the start of this edition of the Talking News was that we had a very interesting talk or session with the Sight Loss Council for Birmingham and the West Midlands. Louise turned up along with a couple of her colleagues at the SVI Tea and Toast session in our common room in West Bromwich. And here's the first 10 minutes or so of what we heard and some of the issues that were raised. And I'll be continuing with that session with the Sight Loss Council next week.
I'm Lou Connor and I work for a charity called Thomas Bocklington Trust. Have any of you heard of us before?
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, that's positive. So we're a charity and an organisation. Our aim is to try and help to break down barriers, raise awareness of the struggles and the challenges that we have as blind and partially sighted people. For full transparency and context, I myself am registered severely sight impaired and I also have hearing loss as well. So if I don't quite catch what you say, I do have Andy, my support worker here, who tends to fill in the gaps. And we also have my colleague PJ, who will introduce herself in a moment. But I suppose just to set the scene of why we're very thankful that you've allowed us to come and join yourselves today. We just want to hear, like, sometimes there are people who are blind and partially sighted with our communities whose voices never get heard, and they don't want to be involved in advocacy work, they don't want to be involved in campaigning. They're quite happy just plodding along, doing whatever it is that people want to do. But we want to make sure we're not missing their voices, and is there something that maybe we're not focusing on as an organisation that we could do? I'm not coming today and promising that whatever you say to me, I'm going to be able to fix tomorrow. Like, Rome wasn't built in a day. And we have business plans where we work on projects 3 years in a row, within a three-year period. At the end of this financial year, in March, we're coming to the end of those 3 years. So we want to make sure that we're listening to the people within our communities and we are still working on what is important to you. I'm going to hand over to PJ to introduce herself quickly.
Hi, everybody. I'm PJ. You might be from the accent. It might be a bit different. It's Australian, in case you want to know. But I've lived over here for quite a while now. I'm the coordinator for the West Midlands Sight Loss Council. So I help our lovely volunteers, such as Claire, who is with us today, help coordinate projects and assist with the work that we do with that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claire, and I am a sort of lapsed member of SVI because I can see people. I know Steve in the corner there. You haven't changed much, and I've had a lovely cuddle with Morse today. So thank you to SVI for my experiences in archery, and it's where I started playing cricket, actually. And I'm here today just to represent the Sight Loss Councils. We're a group of people who like to do advocacy work and campaign for things that will make a difference in the lives of people like us who are visually impaired. So we do a lot of work in three areas that we've been working on. Transport, we've been working with trains, making things accessible. We've got people on access groups at the airport and various other places, all sorts of transport you can think of. We're doing lots of work in health with health, getting access to healthcare that we need, and the differences the approaches that we as visually impaired people need. And we're also working on the built environment at the moment, which includes things like don't all rush at once, e-scooters. I saw a lovely thing on the news this morning about those delivery robots, and I suppose we might still have that to come in our work, but really that's what we do. We've got quite a few, there's about 14 of us at the moment from Birmingham and the Black Country, going as far as Wolverhampton. We're here today to listen to what the issues that you are facing here in the Black Country.
Yes. Try and if we go round, so the projects that Claire, as Claire mentioned, that we've been working on for the last, I think Steve's voice is Steve, old sight loss council member. So we're working, the three main projects that we're working on across the whole country. So when we do Listening Month, which is from today throughout July, we have people like us all over the country, including in Scotland and Wales, not quite Northern Ireland yet, but soon, going out to groups like yourselves. But there is also an online survey that if you don't feel comfortable sharing today, or you don't get chance to say everything you want to say, there is an opportunity for you to give all the information you want to give on an online survey. But we are also very aware that isn't inclusive for everybody, which is why we do the in-person stuff alongside the online stuff. So please do, if you want to, we will share the link later. So the three main priority areas that came out of not last year, so we do these every 2 years, the last Listening Month survey across the whole country was very similar. And those main three areas were accessing transport, postcode lottery. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Do you have talking buses? Well, we might have one. If you live in the city centre, you've got a lot more. London seems to do pretty okay out of the transport bag. So accessing transport was the first big priority that everyone said they struggled with. The second one was accessing healthcare. Now, I don't know how many people we've got in this room. It feels like there's about 20. I imagine not many, if any, people in here get their letters sent out in the format that they can read. We are still struggling all these years later. So that was come out as a big priority. How do people know that they've got healthcare appointments? How do they get there? The treatment that they get when they arrive, you know, wait over there, take a seat, someone just shouts your name and they walk off, all of that kind of stuff. So that was the second priority. And then the third priority that came out of the last Listening Month that we did was accessing things in the built environment. So as Claire said before, we constantly have to tackle pavement, parked cars on the pavement, A-boards getting in the way, e-scooters more and more often than not these days, Uber drivers zipping around like they own the place, you know, overhanging bushes. So if we go around the room and you are comfortable with just saying your name, and I will try my best to learn voices very quickly, and what would you say your biggest barrier is to accessing life in general, whatever it is that you get most annoyed by, or you think in Sandwell is problematic? I'm just going to pass a microphone around, so if you can just pass that on to the next person so that he can hear. I'm going to start with the gentleman to my left in a red cap.
The problem what we got is people, because people leave their bins out, people won't cut their overhanging edges, people think they have a right to knock you out of the way because they want to get there quick, they won't stop at crossings, they won't let you cross, they won't stop at crossings. They park all over the pavement. You try and get help to get round shops sometimes, and you're totally ignored. And even sometimes when you've got a guide dog, you're told to get out.
So would you say accessing the streets is your biggest challenge?
Everything, because to get onto a bus, you've got to access the streets.
Yeah.
And even when you get on the bus sometimes, you're polite to the bus driver, but all of a sudden, they're pulling off when you're halfway down the bus and you can't see where the seats are. You're buggered. And if you've got a dog as well, you're definitely buggered trying to grab hold of an handle.
Okay.
Contacted the council over hanging edges. They say, oh, well, it's up to 10 or 20 odd days. And then hopefully they think we'll forget about it. Don't seem to be doing anything about that anymore now. They find an excuse. Oh, well, it's up to the person who lives there. Well, personally, if there's a hedge over crossing the pavement, That's down to the council. Put it back, send the person the phone.
So we'll get on to that.
Hello. I think my biggest issue is the transport system.
Any particular mode?
Buses. Mainly.
Yeah.
Well, actually, all of them, but mainly buses, because it's about, I don't know what buses come along. Mm-hmm. I know that all bus drivers should have had their training.
Yes.
But a lot of, I can't remember the last time a bus came along, and once the doors open, they're supposed to, well, say hello and then let you know what number buses it's and ask you where you're going and if you need any assistance. That just doesn't happen. But also the main thing is, unless I'm on the bus with somebody, I don't know where to get off.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's only one route really that I do on my own, and that's from like my house to my sister's house.
Yep.
And already when, like, she'll be waiting at the bus stop, but if there's a bus ahead of me, I don't know if there's a bus ahead of me or a bus behind me. So that can get a bit confusing because sometimes, even when the drivers do introduce themselves, they forget to tell you that you're coming up to the stop.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's about, for me, it's...
The transport is the
transport,
biggest.
Yeah.
Okay. And next to you we have...
I think one of the biggest problems with that is vans, when they park onto driveways, leave the back end sticking out, and then they've sometimes got a tow bar on the back, which you can walk into.
Right.
Or they've got a bumper, which is made of metal, and a plastic end cap where the plastic end cap's been broke off, and they've just got little thin sheets of metal that takes chunks out of your leg.
Is this on, like, people's house, like residential?
Residential,
like,
yeah.
Residential
they sort of stick on the driveway and leave the back end sticking out.
Yes.
If they put the front end out, it's nice and soft, but they'd leave the back end sticking out.
So...
well, it leaves just more rounder of a van. It's a bit more round than it is like a square bumper or a tow bar.
So just, I mean, again, generally accessing the streets like you find most challenging.
Yeah, I think things like that.
But that is a big getting problem.
Okay.
It's getting worse and worse now.
Okay. Thank you.
And now we remember George Bell, who passed away very recently. George ran a company called Technovision Systems for over 40 years. He was well-known, well-liked and well-remembered by many of us in the visually impaired community. He passed away at the age of 79 after a long battle with illness on the 24th of June. This obituary was compiled by Jackie Brown and she has uploaded it to her website. Many customer comments about George because so many people knew him.
George, the proverbial giant, assistive technology community, loses one of its founding friends, Jackie Brown, June 2026. George W. F. Bell, managing director of Technovision Systems, lost his battle with ill health on Wednesday, 24th June 2026. George was 79. Since the news of his death broke, many friends and customers have been paying tribute to one of the community's longest-serving allies. I first met George Bell at a small exhibition in Harrogate, North Yorkshire, in 1987. His colleagues were Oggy and Kevin, and the three of them played a pivotal role in supporting blind and visually impaired people for the next four decades or so. Technovision Systems supplied the Braille translation software Duxbury and sold Braille embossers, Braille paper, and transcription services. But perhaps George and company were best known for selling the Eureka A4, a wonderful device that became an integral part of my life for many years. Eureka was the ultimate Australian electronic secretary, complete with word processor, notepad, calculator, diary, telephone directory, database, voltmeter, music composer, and so much more. Then there was the Franklin Language Master Electronic Dictionary, that could play a host of games as well as its intended purpose as the Merriam-Webster Dictionary and Thesaurus. But George was so much more than a dealer and reseller of hardware and software. He believed in making sure his customers purchased the right products for them, offered the fastest turnaround repair service of all companies in the business, and was a plain speaker. George didn't mince his words. If he thought even the products he sold weren't up to the mark, he stopped selling them. His was the first stand I made for at exhibitions in the late 1980s and 1990s, and if you didn't find him there, there was a good chance he would be propping up a bar somewhere nearby. He was kind, generous, incredibly helpful, and often extremely witty. He set up and contributed to several email forums and was always ready to have a chat over the phone. George was a one-off and will be sorely missed by many people. so many, like myself, want to pay tribute to someone who is so richly deserving of our affection and admiration. George was an amazing, kind, generous man whose contribution to this industry and to the people using a wide range of assistive technology cannot be overstated. He was often uncompromising and brutally honest, which is why you always knew you were being told what needed to be told. He was a great friend and, of course, drinking buddy. He introduced me to my late wife, Lisette, and so is ultimately the cause of me leaving the UK for New Zealand a few years later, where I still live after more than 20 years. He did us the honour of being at our wedding, and typically put some money behind the bar at the reception because that is just what he did. On a professional basis, we worked closely together in the 90s and early 2000s, and I learned so much from him. As we say here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, another great oak has fallen. Go well, my friend. I had a lot of help from George over the years, including when I bought my first Windows screen reader. He was also able to rescue some software license details for a program I'd purchased 20 years previously. Ed Green. I have many fond memories of George over the decades, a lot, but not all, based around a bar at 3 in the morning. As has been said, a very kind and generous man, and one of the very few who gave you an honest opinion as to whether something he sold was actually what you needed. My daughter will be saddened, too, as she still has a furry rabbit George gave her 1 year after she helped out on the Technovision stall. R.I.P. George. Richard Bartholomew. At the risk of being somewhat repetitious, George was a great help to me when, in the early 1970s, at a time when I was just trying to learn about tech, he taught me from the basics up, and with terrific patience. Thank you, George Richard Godfrey McKay. He was a pleasure to deal with, and always provided an honest opinion, no matter what we were discussing. He always had time for anyone, and rescued me on quite a few occasions. He will be sorely missed. May he rest in peace. Mobain Iqbal George was a stalwart of the then BCAB community when I joined more than 20 years ago, and his friendly and helpful presence didn't diminish one bit over those years. Leonie Watson. For me, the important thing about George was that he was not simply a trader who served our community. He was also a true ally and supporter in the cause of accessible tech. Ian McRae, there are lots of things I could say about George. However, my comments for what they're worth are these. George was an innovator. How many products can one name that he was the first to bring to the UK? Let's start. This is a greatest hits album, not an exhaustive list. Index Braille embossers. He was the first and major distributor of these for at least 20 years. Many of us were first introduced to the possibility of owning our own Braille printer with the Index machines. Eureka, Robotron Reader, and other Robotron products. One of the first people to access products from other than the USA. He brought these products from Australia, which again provided the ability to read your own print and the ability to use an accessible electronic secretary to the masses. Previously, reading machines cost £50,000, and although still very expensive, the Robotron halved the price of access to print, and thereby moved it into the scope of visually impaired individuals. The Mountbatten Brailler, touted as a replacement for the Perkins. When the Mountbatten eventually arrived after a long time in gestation, it was George who picked it up and started to sell it in this country. Let's not forget the little things that make so much difference. Braille and print, for the first time you could get printed matter out of your Perkins Braille. Many of us encountered this in examination halls in the late 80s. Talking dictionary. I'd love to have one now. It's the only electronic games that I've ever actually played regularly. Finally, one that still endures today. The Duxbury Braille Translator. Yes, it may have originally been developed in the States, but nearly 40 years ago, George was the first to bring it to the UK. George would also experiment. He would try new products, and if they worked out, great. If not, he would simply stop stocking them. Above all, I had constant tales of how George went above and beyond, whether it would be travelling at weekends to give students in their final exams at university repaired products, or staying up half the night to make sure something was turned round in double-quick time. Finally, George was the ultimate bon vivant. I had the pleasure of spending a number of nights in George's company, always accompanied by the banging headache the next morning. R.I.P. George, and thanks for everything. Rob Powell.
And that was just an edited excerpt from Rob Powell's Jubilee magazine, and I thank him for letting us use that. I didn't know George myself. I met him a few times. He will be remembered as much as anything for starting the Site Village exhibitions back in the early 90s, I think, first in London, later on at QAC in Birmingham, and they were there until early this century. And I did go to Site Village the other day, but I might comment more on that next week because we are running out of time a bit. But here's a very brief example of what the Eureka A5 or A4, I think it was, actually sounded like. I'm not sure if it's actually English that it's speaking.
Gold pager, show 1251, page 1, interruption, cancelled.
Now, I used some pretty primitive synthesizers back in the day, but I'm hard-pressed to know what it might have been saying. But rest in peace, George Bell. And by the way, I think one of the things he brought to this country was the internet radio that Wireless for the Blind used to issue until a few years ago. I must close this edition now, even though we've had a bit more time at our disposal this week, because In Touch, which is coming up in a moment, lasts for rather less time than it usually does. So we'll be squeezing that in as usual in a moment. In the meantime, I will thank our readers this week, who were Mia, Jan, Gavin and Rachel, Linda, Janet and Trevor, not forgetting Tony and Gavin doing the distribution at the town hall, Sue picking the articles, pity we don't hear from her much these days, and Sarita uploading to our website and also the podcast, which if you are subscribed to that, then you avoid the postal delays because you should be able to hear us on Friday, perhaps even Thursday. And I'll have more to say about the Talking News player, which is on many websites, including ours, because they're making improvements to that, which I found out something about yesterday. But we'll say more about that soon. And by the way, I must say, in a couple of weeks' time, we're taking a two-week break. So the final edition for July will be 25th of July, before I go away, and we'll be back second week of August. We all need a rest. I'm off to see some friends in the north. In the meantime, hope you've enjoyed listening to this and that you managed to cope with the heat. For now, bye-bye from me, Ray, and all the team, and we'll be back with you next week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.